From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The question is, are we going to get a better future for our children and our grandchildren, or are we going to allow that corrupt political machine out of Chicago, run by Madigan, funded by Pritzker, give them total control so they lock down, get more corruption, higher taxes, more job losses? That's what's at stake here.
One thing that brings us all together and will unite us in November is knowing that now is the time for Mike Madigan to retire. You might hear his name a few times this afternoon.
There's a basic rule in Illinois politics. The political party that remains united wins the election. Look around the room. We are different, but we are Democrats. And if we stay together, we will win the general election. Every Democrat is going to be elected. Thank you very much.
Political events surrounding the Illinois State Fair this week in Springfield. We'll discuss the status of the campaigns for governor and a lot more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in studio with me, Daisy Contreras, IPR Statehouse reporter, and NPR Illinois reporter Jacqueline Driscoll joining us this week. In our Statehouse Bureau, it's our Statehouse editor, Brian Mackey. Brian, I'll start with you. The State Fair has been the unofficial kickoff to the campaign season. This time around, though, those campaigns have been in full swing for several months. And let's start with Democrat Day. What was the takeaway from that event?
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of takeaways that I had. One, as we heard at the top of the show, Speaker Madigan is unpopular. Democrats know it. He seems to know it. He gave a very brief talk about unity at the beginning of the event and then left. The chairman of the party did not stick around for his own, you know, for the Democrats' own rally to, you know, heading, as you said, the unofficial kickoff. The other takeaway, news flash, they don't like President Trump. Democrats also don't like Governor Rauner. But what I thought was interesting is that they talked about particularly the guest speaker, who I think a lot of people were prepared to be disappointed by because they were, you know, this was a record-breaking crowd this year. More than 3,000 tickets were sold to see former Vice President Joe Biden come in. Biden fell ill, came down with laryngitis, couldn't make it. So the organizers ended up getting a guy named Pete Buttigieg, who is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And I'm sure a lot of us were Googling his name for the first time this week. He did run for chairman of the DNC last year, but withdrew when it was clear he didn't have the votes. But he is viewed as a rising star, and he gave a pretty well-reviewed speech. And one thing he talked about is that, you know, we as Democrats, from his perspective, can't just talk about what's wrong with the people in power, what's wrong with President Trump, what's wrong with Governor Rauner. We have to tell people about what Democrats stand for and make the case for democratic values and why more Americans should embrace those over the Republicans that they have been voting for president and governor in Illinois.
And Mayor Pete, as he's normally, you know, usually called.
Nobody wants to pronounce Buttigieg.
Yeah, and he said that too. I mean, he also mentioned that Republicans have, quote, lost their minds and Democrats have lost their voices. So kind of going back to what Brian was saying, that the Democratic Party needs to find their voice again and come together.
I remember Speaker Madigan saying this several times through the years where he would always say, I'm not a member of an organized party, I'm a Democrat. But he did sort of focus in on the fact that we are the more united party, and some people might agree with that right now. I mean, there have certainly been years where that's not the case. Jacqueline, you were also a witness to a lot of the events that took place this week. Did it seem as though Democrats, or you know, the message is the same for the Democrats? They really want to defeat Rauner and, you know, of course, you know, bring up Donald Trump as much as possible.
Definitely. That's pretty much all. You know, those were the main takeaways. But again, it's hard not to feel the Democrats, not to feel unified when you're sitting in a room with 3,000 other Democrats. And I'd say the same for Republican Day as well. So they did a good job in sticking to their message. We don't like Donald Trump and we don't like Governor Rauner. But again, I didn't really hear a message. We talked about the progressive income tax briefly. Still no numbers, still no bracket statistics. So
that's something that Pritzker's pushing
for.
Yeah,
correct. So. Yeah, sorry about that. So, yeah, but it seems to be let's beat Rauner, let's beat Trump.
Charlie, Speaker Madigan, at these events I've seen through the years, he usually makes an appearance. Brian mentioned he left after giving his speech. But he usually doesn't keep the spotlight on himself in these types of things anyways. And he probably realizes to some extent he is a bit of a lightning rod of controversy right now. So maybe it is best if he just, you know, gets out of the way and lets the focus be on the other speakers.
Yeah, I think the lightning rod for controversy is sort of an understatement. Yeah. He's like the main element of Bruce Rauner's campaign. And Madigan is not somebody who hogs the spotlight. He's always been somebody who is the behind-the-scenes type of guy who arranges things, makes things happen, but he doesn't crave publicity for himself. And I suspect the reason that he had as few words and then got out of town was because he did not want to be pictured with any of the other candidates to feed the propaganda arm of the Republican Party that everybody is Mike Madigan's puppet. And so it was, to me, it was very smart of him to do that. Why
Brian,
give them that kind of free opportunity?
The
candidates know that Madigan is behind them. He's got their back, and he'll do whatever it takes to get them elected. They don't need to have some photo op that then can be turned into opposition propaganda.
A lot of people don't know what these events really are. A lot of people have never made it to these events. We often see county chairmen at this breakfast, and of course we'll see, you know, people who are working in precincts and things like that. We really see the people who are doing a lot of the groundwork come out to these types of events, and I'm assuming that's what we saw this week, Brian, at this. Those are the people you really have to fire up when you want to win a campaign, though. Those are the people that are getting out, knocking on doors, getting the signs up, things like that. They, you know, from what you saw, and I know you weren't able to be there for the Republican event, but from the Democratic side, are they fired up?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly seem like it. It was maybe a little more muted than it might have been had Joe Biden actually made it. I think there was, and I just to convey the size and scope of this, this is usually a ballroom that has a lot of circular tables. People sit around the tables, they eat breakfast, you hear the glasses clinking, it goes on for 3 hours. Well, this one did go on for almost 3 hours, but instead of that arrangement, they had to pack so many more chairs in. There was an overflow room. They had kind of auditorium-style seating. They had this ballroom that I don't know how long it was, certainly more than a football field, I think, just filled with people. And these, like you said, Sean, these are not only the party bigwigs, but the people who are knocking on doors, making phone calls, really the passionate, true believers. And, you know, we think of Illinois as a blue state, but there's a lot of parts of the state that are pretty deep red. Outside Cook County and some of the major metropolitan areas downstate, a few of the suburbs, that is Trump country. It's really a red state. But even in those areas, you do have a lot of Democrats. And we've seen, you know, changes. The Democrats are trying to flip a couple of downstate congressional districts. Congressman Rodney Davis in the 13th district, which goes from Champaign to Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington, all the way over to Metro East. And then the 12th district, which is Congressman Mike Bost, which heads from the Metro East area on the Illinois side of St. Louis, all the way down to the Kentucky border. You have Democrats challenging, and you know, the prognosticators are saying that they have a real, you know, they have a better chance than they have in other recent years of actually flipping those seats to Democrats if this blue wave materializes. And so you have people in parts of the state that are normally just used to kind of casting Democratic votes and not much coming of it, because it's, you know, there's 70, 30 districts going the other way. But people really feel like they have an opportunity to make a difference this year. And of course, in statewide races, every Democratic vote counts, no matter whether it's, you know, and the same for Republicans. Every vote counts, no matter whether the area is lopsided one way or the other.
Well, of course, we've said that Democrats are fired up. We kind of expected that. What about Republicans? Daisy, you were out at the Republican event. This took place at the fairgrounds. There was a big event there. Did you get the same type of energy?
I did. I mean, from a lot of the folks out there that I went and I interviewed, a lot of them said that they felt very energized. Unlike the Democrats, the Republicans, or at least a little bit more obvious, their issue has been this feel of division. So throughout that day, the Republicans were definitely trying to paint a picture of unity. For months, they've struggled to entice far-right Republicans to support the governor. And as we may recall earlier, the party chair ended up being a position divided between two individuals, Tim Schneider, who was Rauner's handpick for the job, and Mark Shaw, who was Jeannie Ives' pick. And so there was some worry back then as to how that would work out. And now, according to both of them, it was the best decision they could have made.
Well, here we are on this show for months sitting here talking about how divided the Republicans are. They're saying they're not, at least the people that were at this event. But a few people did sort of, you know, illustrate the fact that there are some divisions there that, you know, some things that need to be overcome for the party, especially for Bruce Rauner to be successful.
Right. There was that sense. A lot of them were being a little bit cautious in saying, yeah, we've got this. You know, some are saying we still have some issues that we have to overcome. We have to get past those issues and just stand behind Rauner, no matter where you stand on those issues.
Well, I found it curious, and you guys can correct me if I'm misremembering this, which is sometimes a problem at my age. But the Republican candidate for comptroller, Darlene Sanger, said, in essence, in response to reporters' questions, that the bottom line for people who aren't particularly happy with Rauner is that he's the lesser of two evils, I believe was her phrase. So if you're someone who is conservative on social issues and you're very mad at Bruce Rauner for some of the actions he's taken as governor, you can think, well, J.B. Pritzker is not any less liberal than the governor, whereas on all these economic issues, the governor is definitely on the side of folks who think public employee unions have too much power and all of that rhetoric. And so Sanger says, well, you got these two people to pick between, so you go for the lesser of two evils, who is Bruce Rauner. What that doesn't take into account, though, is the fact that Sam McCann is also on the ballot, and for someone for whom social issues are the most important element, Sam McCann is the person that you would vote for.
And Sam McCann is a Republican senator turned gubernatorial candidate under the Conservative Party heading. And we can talk more about him in a minute. But Jacqueline, I know you were out at Republican Day as well. Your thoughts on what you saw there?
I thought that it was a very energized crowd as well. But again, how it's hard not to be when you're surrounded by a bunch of Republicans with the same values. And they're excited about what could happen in November. I think a lot of the people that Daisy and I did speak with, they did mention the issues that took place in the primaries, and that's still very prevalent in their minds. They still know that it's going to be a long road ahead. But Rauner, again, he laid out, you know, we need to stop the gerrymandering. We need to have the biggest ground game in Illinois history, and he's really trying to call on his supporters and just the regular people to get on the ground, go knock on doors. And I thought surprisingly, he did ask for some help with money. He asked for people to donate. He says, I can't do it all on my own, even though we know that he does have a lot of money. He said he's going to contribute a lot to it, but he can't do it on his own. So he wants everybody in Illinois to get energized and get behind him.
And I may point out as well, too, it was very interesting during one of the interviews that he gave, he actually said the president is doing important work. And before, in the last few months, Governor Rauner hasn't really come out and said anything in support of Trump. He didn't mention President Trump by name, but he did say that he was, you know, he believed he was doing outstanding work. So I think this mention of Trump during this rally, he wanted those far, you know, more conservative Republicans to kind of, you know, I'm standing with you.
And Brian, is it too late for that? Do you think that, you know, has that ship sailed for Bruce Rauner?
I mean, so this is the question, right? I think that I too, like Charlie, was struck by Darlene Sanger's, the controller candidate's comments that, you know, or acknowledgement in response to a reporter's questions that Rauner was the lesser of two evils. But voters have been dealing with candidates that they think are the lesser of two evils for a very long time, right? Mm-hmm. If you were a Bernie Sanders supporter in 2016, Hillary Clinton probably seemed like the lesser of two evils compared to Donald Trump, or maybe not. And maybe that's, you know, enough. Thousands of people in one state worth enough to cost her the vote. But, you know, people for whom the party label, you know, who are very engaged in their party politics, as more and more people are, there are fewer independents, political science research tells us, in this day and age. Those people do tend to come home if they vote, and that's the question. If there's an enthusiasm difference, I mean, Democrats seem to be very excited heading into this election. Will Republicans be as excited to vote for a governor who shares some of their values, but maybe not all of their values? And, you know, as Charlie said, there is an alternative on the ballot, although, you know, we are a two-party system for the most part. I mean, you can have obviously these alternate candidates, but for the most part in Illinois, it's going to be the Democrats or the Republicans who win these major offices. So in a sense, you're casting a protest vote, and a vote for McCann is ultimately helping J.B. Pritzker, the Democrat.
Well, speaking of Sam McCann, who I mentioned was selected as a Republican, really was a Tea Party favorite who was put into the Illinois State Senate a few years back, now running as the Conservative Party candidate for governor. Seen some polling on those. Don't know how exact it is, but it's showing him with, 8 to 10% of the of support among the electorate, among the likely voters. That certainly is an issue for Bruce Rauner. If, like Brian said, if it's a protest vote and it hurts Bruce Rauner, if he could, pull that type of support, that's going to definitely be a problem for the governor. The governor weighed in, Daisy, on Sam McCann this week, made a charge against him.
Yeah, he said that he thinks Sam McCann is a scam. He's somebody that was planted into this race by Madigan and Pritzker.
And what did McCann have to say about that?
He said he had absolutely no connection to the Democrats, that, this is something that he's doing on his own to, kind of separate himself from Rauner and everything Rauner has done.
Charlie, do you think there's anything to that? Or
what?
That
McCann is a Madigan plant? No, that's as goofy as when the governor said that Jeannie Ives was, in essence,
Madigan's favorite
Republican legislator. I mean, you got to have a little rationality about it. McCann is running because there were a large number of Republicans who were extraordinarily dissatisfied, to use a gentle term, with the governor because of some of the legislation he signed, and particularly the bill that makes taxpayer-funded abortions available to people on Medicaid and to people on the state employee health insurance programs, particularly after he had told others, including the cardinal in Chicago, Blaise Kupich, that he was going to veto the bill. That's the kind of thing that people don't forget. And if this is an issue that is extremely important to you, you're not going to forgive Rauner for that. You're not going to vote for Rauner. You're not going to vote for Pritzker. And as somebody said earlier, as a protest, you may vote for Sam McCann.
But I would also argue, too, we had Jeannie Ives running against Rauner in the primary. And when she did lose that primary by a very narrow margin, obviously there's a lot of dissatisfied voters. But even after she lost, she did come out and say, I'm a Republican. I'm going to vote Republican. She does have that other option. But I think that's important to consider as well.
But didn't she also say she wasn't going to endorse the governor?
Right. And I don't think she has, if I'm correct.
Not so far.
Go ahead.
I think you're right.
Go ahead, Brian.
No, I sorry to interrupt, but I think it's worth taking a step back because I think some, there's truthiness to what's been said about McCann, and I'm sure he is, sincere when he says that he didn't like the abortion vote or the abortion bill signing that the governor did and the pro-police immigrant community relations bill that the governor signed that conservatives have falsely, the Democrats and the governor say, described as a so-called sanctuary bill. But McCann and Governor Rauner have a longer history than that. McCann committed the sin, in Rauner's eyes, several years ago of trying to vote his district. Okay, he represents Springfield and areas south of Springfield. There are a lot of state workers in his area. And the governor, the Democrats tried to pass a bill that would have supported the AFSCME union in its contract negotiations with the Rauner administration. It was intended to give them some more leverage in those negotiations. And the governor wanted Republicans to vote his way on it. And McCann decided to vote his district. And in response to that, the governor ran an opponent against McCann and didn't just run the opponent, but personally campaigned with this person and supported his campaign. And that failed. And so McCann remained in the legislature and there was a bitterness. And ever since then, there have been times where McCann seemed like he was practically a Democrat. He would show up at news conferences with Democrats and was just taking a lot of opportunities to poke the governor. And I think that, you know, there's a way of looking at his campaign as a continuation of this animosity that's built up over the years, which does speak to the broader issue of Rauner's attempt to strong arm the legislature and strong arm particularly Republicans. It worked in most cases. It did not work in the case of Senator Sam McCann. And I think we're seeing that the governor is now reaping what he sowed several years ago when he first began trying to work his will on the legislature.
And kind of the irony of it all is that whether Sam McCann voted to override the veto, voted to support the veto, didn't vote at all, was on a trip in Hawaii, it wouldn't have made any difference. The override passed with more than enough votes. Sam McCann was sort of like icing on the cake, and I would argue that were the governor more politically sophisticated, he would have realized that and said to Sam, okay, I know you got to be against me on this because of your district, but I'm going to need you on other stuff where your vote will make an important difference in the results, and so I want you to be with me when it counts.
Or maybe he'll need him to not run against me when I'm running for governor in the fight of my political
life. That bridge has been burnt already.
Well, when I mentioned earlier all these party faithful that come in for these events at the state fair, often what is also associated with those events are fundraisers. They take place at different, you know, establishments around the area. You have all these people in, and it's a good opportunity for people to get to see a candidate, maybe to give some money. Oftentimes alcohol is served. And at one of these fundraisers, usually they don't make much news, but one of them did this week. Jacqueline, fill us in on what took place.
Yeah, so Republican Congressman Rodney Davis is field director. He's a younger gentleman, Levi Lovell, was at J.P. Kelly's at a Betsy Dirksen Londrigan campaign, the Democratic challenger to Davis in the 13th Congressional District. And apparently police were called because Lovell appeared to be intoxicated. He had his cell phone in people's faces, supporters of Londrigan. Also, Londrigan says her family, and he started to get physical when the bar asked him to leave. Just, I guess, stuff you just don't really hear about.
He was trying to ask questions with that, like trying to get people to say something, I guess, on
right,
video.
Right, correct, to antagonize them so he could bring it back to the Davis campaign to, I guess, essentially hurt Londrigan's chances in the race. Londrigan did say that it is normal for her to see trackers or political operatives at her campaign events, somehow affiliated with the Davis campaign, but they never get physical. So Lovell was eventually arrested. He was charged with aggravated battery, and the next morning, Davis's campaign did fire him.
And he did apologize. I think Rodney Davis did apologize. And there's no evidence that Davis's campaign really sent him to do this. We don't know that right. actually took place. This reminds me a little bit.
Well, I should say, Sean, we don't know because Congressman Davis has not answered questions
right. we
from
don't.
Reporters. He put a statement out.
Yeah. So like I said, we don't know really what the status of this reminds me. These trackers have been going for a while. So.
Yeah, it's reasonable to assume that every campaign would have folks whose job right. it is to keep tabs on what the opponents are doing.
Both parties. Really.
In both parties, yeah, right. yeah. And so if somebody's having a rally or a fundraiser for the other party, I'm gonna go or I'm going to have one of my people go just to watch what's going on and try and record anything that might be embarrassing that could be turned into an attack ad. The difference is that the trackers are usually just kind of there in the background. They're
passive.
Sort of nondescript. They're quiet. They're just doing their job. They don't aggressively confront people and try and bait them into saying something that would make a good campaign clip.
And normally, I think this wouldn't be, I mean, much more than, and it may not be more than a one-off type of incident here, but you are in this, you know, the Me Too movement. You have women's, you know, fighting against, you know, what they've termed as bullying at times. Everything has risen to a different level, and this type of thing certainly, you know, feeds into that, I think. So it's a little bit different. This does remind me, though, of when Barack Obama was running for the U.S. Senate back in 2004, and his Republican opponent at the time had one of these trackers videotaping him, following him around everywhere. And Obama came to the old State House press room, and I remember I was walking down the hall, and he was standing there, and he goes, "Oh, meet my shadow." And this guy had just been with him all the time. The guy wouldn't say anything. I think we tried to say, "Who are you? Where are you from?" He would never say or whatever. But this has been going on for a long time. But in this day of cell phone video where it's just so easy to get it, it's everywhere, People also got this fellow on mm-hmm. video, so I mean, it's certainly going to follow him forever. So basically, he's been charged, I guess was released on bond. Mm-hmm. He's been fired. Is it over now? Do we think this whole thing just blows over?
I can't say. I think that the Laundrygate campaign is going to talk about it. They already have. They've already issued their own statements. Laundrygate's doing interviews, but we haven't heard from Davis. And I think that maybe hearing from him rather than just a statement might put it to bed a little quicker.
Well, on the legal side of it, the question is, will whoever filed the charges against him initially, and I don't know if it was one of the bouncers at J.P. Kelly's, which is basically it's a downtown Springfield bar, filed the charges that resulted in him being arrested for aggravated assault, or if it was one of Lonergan's people, we'll have to see. Because it's possible, too, that it could end that whoever filed the charges would say, okay, this guy was drunk, so let's forget about it.
Mm-hmm. It could, but, I mean, the prosecutor now has video of this, so mm-hmm. even if somebody mm-hmm. doesn't want to pursue charges, it's ultimately the prosecutor who makes that decision.
Sure.
And, aggravated battery does seem like a very strong charge.
Assault, right?
It
was aggravated battery, piggyback off of that, I was initially shocked by that as well, because typically that means, broken bones, blood. But I did ask the lieutenant, and he says because it was in a public place, they automatically upgrade it to aggravated battery.
Which shows you just how easy, it's almost impossible to commit non-aggravated battery anymore. Mm-hmm. There are so many protected, mm-hmm. it's not just, it was once if you hit a police officer or a priest or something, and now it's just, as Jacqueline said, in a public place. It becomes aggravated, which we could have a whole nother discussion about the penalty enhancements in our criminal justice system, but we don't have time for that today.
Yeah, maybe next week we could do that. Yeah,
it's still going to be August.
Well, time now for our notes from the field. Daisy, let's start with you.
Yeah, a new law. Newborns will now be tested for spinal muscular atrophy. This is a terminal disease that causes severe symptoms that eventually prohibit a child from walking, standing, eating. And most children with a genetic disorder will not live past 18 months. So hopefully by 2020, any newborn will be tested so they are able to receive some type of treatment.
Jacqueline?
And I'm going to do a little futuristic notes from the field. Some bills that we are keeping our eye on that possibly we could see some action on next week. The bill that would increase the age to buying tobacco products to 21, as well as the bill that would allow the use of medicinal marijuana in replace of opioids for pain management.
All right, Charlie?
Well, the governor also signed legislation this week that would basically do away with the practice of public officials who get in a jam and are given golden parachutes, huge severance payments to get out. This new legislation would prohibit any kind of severance package for people who have been fired for cause for misconduct, and it would also limit the size of these golden parachutes to no more than 20 weeks of compensation. There have been various examples of people getting hundreds of thousands of dollars who kind of got caught in an uncomfortable position, and the board says, well, if you leave, we'll pay you this money if you don't sue us when we fire you, that kind of nonsense.
That will do it for this week. The members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Jacqueline Driscoll. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.